Well, the one thing I wanted to throw
out. Family life and politics is all completely different. But
well, yeah.
Well, I wanted
it's a short sight, too. That's
I wanted to say, though, I'm glad somebody decided to at least tell somebody else. I think the Great Pyramid might be a huge power-generating plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because without that kind of discussion, you don't get to think about it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you may not agree with it, but it still makes you think about it.
Right. At least you sat down and thought about it. You know, maybe let's take a look at some numbers or whatever. I'm glad somebody proposed the idea.
Oh, yeah. I think it's important that you get those people have those ideas and that they get out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, even though, I mean, we've heard some things on this show, I know while we were broadcasting, there's been a few situations where we've heard an idea come out of someone's mouth, and we all looked at each other and, like, just went, cuckoo, 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 and we're like, this is insane. But you know what? We sat and thought about it and said, you know what? We don't agree with what you say, but, man, you made us think. That's really cool. You made us think about things in a different point of view. I got to throw this out, and I don't want to throw things off, but the one image I have of you, Dr. Shock, which we were talking about a lot of the opposition that you guys have had as far as this idea goes, the gentleman, and I might get a phone call from him tomorrow or an email or a smoke signal or something, but Mr. Mark Lerner. I think that's his name.
Lerner.
He's got wonderful ideas, but there was in the special, you were actually presenting your ideas to Lerner was one of the people on the panel, and this is you guys, everybody's gonna get a kick out of this because they show the video. I'm sure it was edited and stuff like that, but Dr. Shock's up there talking about this is what the idea is, and this is solid scientific evidence. Man, you guys should be so jazzed about this. We're all happening people here. Cool, all right. Yay me. Cool, all right. And then they move over to Lerner, going, I don't see anything here that convinces me of anything. And then they put the camera back on Dr. Shock, and there's Dr. Shock sitting with his head down, shaking his head, going, my God, what are you doing, man? I got a good kick out of it. I was like, because this gentleman just put his heart and soul into this work. And, I mean, you can't, as ourselves, we're not criticizing anybody either. But I found that situation as far as the special went where... Well, you were just sitting there with your head down going, oh, my goodness, geez, oh, Pete.
I'll tell you, I remember those days, too. I mean, it was sort of pitiful. One of Mark Lehner's colleagues, associates, who was supposedly a geologist, or I don't want to sound too nasty here, but I think there's enough time now that I can say things like this, enough distance between it temporally, who was supposed to be one of his consulting geologists or whatnot.
Yeah.
After it was either before or after the formal presentations, I was being, which is what I tend to be, I was being very open. I was showing him all the data I have, etc. And I remember this other geologist who was working for Lerner or working with Lerner. He's trying to look at one of some of the data that I had, and he was looking at some of the seismic data, some of the seismic printouts and whatnot, and it became incredibly obvious to me, embarrassingly obvious, that he had no clue what he was looking at.
Now
here's the kicker. At one point, he's looking at one of the printouts and trying to make sense out of it, and I was very calm and collected. I very gently said, here, why don't we turn it around so you can see it properly? He was looking at it upside down.
Oh, no.
That is how bad it was.
That's embarrassing.
He didn't even know enough to be able to look at it right side up.
You see, and that's where this idea comes from. And it's one of the most frustrating things any of us have studying. When, you know, we're ghost hunters by trade, so we're out, you know, trying to collect scientific evidence on the afterlife and things like that. As the same that you did already, you collected scientific evidence on this redating and weathering of the Sphinx. And it seems that, you know, you bring evidence to a group of people who have, and, you know, it turns into this, you know, he said, she said, I'm on your side, I pick my side thing.
Right, exactly. That's what degenerates to, which is, to me, that's dumb.
Yeah, I mean, is there any is there any true objectivity left on the planet anymore? It seems is there a person that you can come to go, okay, look, you are the greatest mediator on the planet. We need you to look at this data, okay, from a completely objective, you know, point of view. and tell us what you think with no predispositions whatsoever. I've looked at the data that you and John have presented from an objective point of view. I think the best of my abilities. I'm not a geologist. I'm not an Egyptologist, but I've looked at it, and one of your gifts, Dr. Shock, is you are able to break things down to a point where even the layman like myself that goes, oh, rock, cool, no, neat rock. No, I mean, that's all I know about rocks. I mean, I find them fascinating. I do find them fascinating. Our whole universe is made of them, but I don't have the depth that you have, but you're able to break it down. And go, and like the whole layer cake idea, I mean, I'm that totally like, wow, okay, now I get it. I've spread the gospel for you. I've talked to so many people about it. You're able to explain things in this manner to really make people understand it and help them to understand it. But there is this idea where people just, even the people that do know something, like you just said, the Mr. Lehner is, resident geologist on site. He can combat your idea. I mean, this gentleman, from what you say, he was looking at the readout upside down.
Upside down. I mean, just incredible. I don't know if it was a combination of ignorance or just so, how should I say, maybe his mind was so blocked he couldn't think straight.
Yeah.
You know, that he knew what the answer was, and, he wasn't, couldn't even, look at the data to,
Well, that's scary because it is my opinion.
Well, I'll give you the opposite story. Here's sort of the on the other side of it. When I first presented this data, it was at Geological Society of America, and I was I was going to give a presentation on all this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I ran into a friend of mine who another geologist who I'd known for many years already. But this was in 1990, I think it was, 1990, 1991, so very early on.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed him all the data that, we were just talking informally. I showed him all the data that I was going to present in the talk, later that afternoon or whatnot. And he and I always got along well, and we're always very honest with each other, et cetera, et cetera. He started to laugh, and I was devastated.
Oh, no.
Why are you laughing? And he said, oh, don't worry about it. It's just so obvious. It's so bleeding obvious. I mean, he was laughing because it was so straightforward.
Well, yeah, I mean, really.
And so, it was. He was laughing in the sense of, why didn't anyone ever see this before?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it is funny when I think about it.
And the way he was laughing at was when I was trying to explain, what is the Egyptological dating, et cetera, and he said, it's just so obvious geologically, they make no sense. And I, being a little nervous, I guess, at first I thought, it only lasted 3 seconds, but for 3 seconds there, I thought he was laughing at me, not...
Yeah.
Well, the opposite way, but in fact, it was a good laugh. If that makes sense.
Well, when you break it down like this, and when you explain it, just the way that things work on this planet, I got a chuckle too. I was like, my God! I mean, I know when I first saw this, I got a chuckle too. Like, wow, that's pretty obvious, man.
What did it take to come up with the idea of looking at the geology of the Sphinx? Like what? Why did, he was laughing, and right now I'm sort of doing the same thing internally. I'm like, why didn't anyone do this in the 60s and the
40s? Well, the honest, I would say, frankly, most geologists really don't care about the Sphinx.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Most geologists don't really care about ancient Egypt, per se. And I don't want to sound the wrong way, but most geologists, I'm a geologist, I know geologists, that's the way I was trained and brought up. I never took a geology class where anyone ever talked about ancient Egypt or really cared about ancient Egypt, because what's the oldest stuff in Egypt by traditional dating? Maybe going back 5,000 years, that's nothing. It's not even... that's post Ice Age. It's what we call Holocene. It's just this literally. I'm not figuratively, but literally, that's the scum on the surface of the earth. The last 5 to 10,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you sort of kick away with your heel to get to the real rocks.
Okay.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Geologists just don't really. Your typical geologist. They're interested in stuff, if they're historical geologists, they're interested in stuff that goes back millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of years.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a mineralogist type, they're interested in minerals and how they're formed, that type of thing. If they're oil geologists, they're looking for oil.
Mm-hmm.
You get the picture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Geologists, I mean, there's...
So it wasn't anything anybody ever wanted or had an interest
in to
concentrate.
Yeah, I mean, your typical geologist doesn't have any particular interest in looking at any ancient culture.
Well, that and it is taking two things. I mean, and this idea, I mean, you did the approach to this, and you've explained this. Like, you know, I'm coming in as a geologist, and I'm going to look at this thing from a geologist's point of view, not an Egyptologist's point of view, which is taking two different things that traditionally aren't put together.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of.
Exactly. And then now, and some people say they should not be put together. I wanted to tell you another little anecdotal story.
Okay.
I was at another Egyptological conference once, and this elderly Egyptologist, very senior, I honestly don't know what his name is now. I mean, I think I may have at the time, but he was supposed to impress me more than he did impress me because I was so naive at the time that I didn't really understand that, like, he was one of the, supposedly one of the great Egyptologists that was still alive or whatever he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, he was just old man. No, I don't mean to sound nasty, but he came up very gently, very nicely, and said something to the effect, I wish I could, you know, do it as a direct quote, but I don't remember exactly how he said. But he said something very, you know, something like, you know, young man, there are lots of rocks around the world other than in Egypt. Why don't you go look at some other rocks and leave Egypt alone? Something like that.
Oh my!
Well, let's go away.
Exactly, Doug. I mean, I find that kind of funny. You know, I mean, I can imagine this old man going, "Son,"
but he
go
was
away.
Perfectly. He wasn't saying it in a joking way. That's the thing.
Oh, he was serious.
He was absolutely serious. I'm a geologist. Go look at rocks somewhere else. Don't, you know, get involved in this. And he wasn't saying that for my benefit. That
yeah,
he's going to cause
obviously.
Me trouble. You're saying that for his benefit. He didn't want Egyptology having to deal with this.
And that right there again, that's just scary in my opinion. I mean,
yeah, I agree. I agree.
It's so bizarre.
I mean, he didn't want his life's work being, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. I've seen a lot of Egyptologists seem to be threatened by this, and I've always had the attitude that shouldn't be threatening.
It should be
even though the Sphinx. The initial portions of the Sphinx go back thousands of years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It was around in Old Kingdom times. It was around in New Kingdom times.
Mm-hmm.
They were just dealing with and worshiping or, you know, refurbishing whatever, a monument that was a lot older. It's not like taking away from later Egyptian history. It's just adding to the beginning of Egyptian history.
You know, and that's the crux of it right there, too, is that a lot of these people, like Doug mentioned, is that I think a lot of people feel challenged. Like, you know, someone like yourself is going to walk in there and go, "Nope, you're wrong. Go away. Ha ha. I win."
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't take
I've
you to be
that way. I've
never
taken that attitude personally.
Yeah, I don't take you to be that way. And this is just a different viewpoint on this thing. And like I said before, the whole car analogy. I mean, and I think we could do a lot more personally with automobiles. That's just my opinion. But to come from the 40s to where we are today, we wouldn't have been able to do that. Unless somebody was open-minded enough to go, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to rethink this idea. I think new idea you have might make the car more fuel efficient or make the radio sound better or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Right. But if we use the car analogy just a little bit more, there are also things that get stuck and ingrained, and the more you do it, the harder it is to get out of it.
Oh, yeah.
You've got, I mean, the thing that comes to my mind is gasoline-powered internal combustion engines.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, you have a huge industry, a huge infrastructure, you know, gas distribution, the oil industry, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of vested interest in keeping cars gasoline-powered.
Oh, absolutely. I can see that. I can see Doug turning red right now as we speak.
That's,
that's one of my
pet topics.
And I mean, eventually, we're going to have to go. We're digressing a little bit here, but eventually, I think we'll have to go another way because we're going. I'm talking as a geologist. We're going to run out of oil, or at least oil that's feasible to turn into gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Whether probably for political reasons before geologic reasons.
Well, in my opinion, we're not digressing at all, because we just got done talking about the layers of limestone in Egypt that are being destroyed.
Yeah.
That are being destroyed as a result of internal combustion engines.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a lot of places in Egypt that I guarantee you, because we have documentary evidence now, where you've got photographs, say, going back to the 1860s, you can see exactly what shape the monuments were in. You can look at them now, and more damage has been done to them in the last 100 to 140, 150 years than thousands of years before that.
Yeah, and that has to do with
the internal combustion engine and the pollution, which eats away at the surface of the limestone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That ties right in my opinion. That's
another issue which I've had to contend with at Egyptological meetings in particular, because sometimes the bright-eyed Egyptologists come and they say, oh, you know, they've been on site, they've been on their digs, and the limestone is weathering like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because of the pollution from Cairo. that has no bearing on, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll have to try to explain patiently that they don't, without saying it so bluntly, that they really don't know what they're talking about, because mm-hmm. they're confusing modern pollution and erosion due to modern pollution with other things.
Right, because mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm talking about at all.
Mm-hmm. 75 years ago, there wasn't maybe 100 years ago, there wasn't a brown haze over Los Angeles
The other thing, to get back to Egypt, the other thing that caused a lot of damage in Egypt environmentally is the Aswan Dam.
Okay.
Really?
The Aswan Dam has changed ground level, water levels, water table levels in the ground. And this has caused a lot of damage to a lot of the monuments, because it's changed the water table. It's basically raised the water table. And even though I don't know how much people know about that, when they built the High Aswan Dam, it has a huge lake backed up behind it, mm-hmm. Lake Nasser,
mm-hmm.
which literally flooded out a number of temples and archaeological sites. They moved couple of them to higher ground. The Temple of Philae, in particular Abu Simbel, they were moved to higher ground. But a lot of things were they're under the water now, under the artificial lake. But monuments downstream, it raised the water table, and even though many monuments, for instance, around the Luxor area, were not flooded, and you can't see anything on the surface, what happens is the water table got raised, salts in the water started working their way up, and now it's attacking the monuments and flaking off the limestone murals and reliefs and all that type of stuff.
Well, it's easier said than done, but you'd think that the powers that be involved with that, their number one objective would be to preserve those monuments.
No. I find that
ridiculous that they don't think that way.
Yeah, a lot of people think that they should think that way, but what I would say is I've run into PhD Arabs, Egyptians, not mm-hmm. Egyptologists, Egyptians, you know, PhD in economics or something like that,
mm-hmm.
when I'm over there, and I remember once having lunch in some restaurant, and I start talking with a guy, he turns out to be, I don't know, economics professor or something at University of Cairo, and of course, you know, I'm clearly not Egyptian. why are you over here? Oh, I'm looking at the Great Pyramid and Sphinx and stuff. And his offhand comment was something like, oh, they should just knock that all down. It's just a nuisance.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess if you have to look at it every day, you get bored with it, I imagine.
Walmart there.
But I don't think it's if you think about it in different ways, this fellow was Arab, Muslim. I'm not saying anything bad about Arabs or Muslims, because I have many very close friends who are both.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not Egyptian in the sense that that was his longtime heritage. You know, his family had come to Egypt. It was Arab.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arabs invaded Egypt, you know, in what we would call medieval times.
Mm-hmm.
Just like America, most Americans aren't descended from Native Americans.
No.
Right.
So, you know, there's plenty of Americans that don't think twice about building shopping malls over Native American burial grounds.
Yeah, it's the exact same viewpoint, more or
less. And
it's
the same viewpoint. There are many Arab Egyptians who, the only reason they would say preserve that temple is because they know that European tourists come to visit it, and that means money.
That's income for those guys.
It isn't
a sentimental value.
And it's not their personal heritage. Mm-hmm. Now, you do have Egyptians in Egypt who are descended from the ancient Egyptians. They tend to be a minority, and in some cases are sort of put down. And there it is, you know, their personal heritage. But a lot of Egyptians, modern Egyptians, they're Arabs, in the sense of Arabs who, you know, immigrated to the country, and they're not descendants of the native Egyptians.
Well, I can understand that. Now that you explained, I can understand that, too.
It's still a bit on the narrow side.
Yeah, I know.
I agree. I think, you know, with ancient Egypt, and not to degrade Native American cultures, but it's one thing to have a Native American burial ground where there's really not a whole lot to see versus an ancient Egyptian temple with incredible, you know, artwork and, I mean, you've got to be sort of brain dead not to realize there's something interesting there.
Well, that's the thing, and I mean, I haven't talked to anybody in my life who has seen the Great Pyramid personally, for example, okay, or the Sphinx at that. Now, I have a few friends that have been there, and I've talked to many people just in passing that have been to Egypt, and I have not talked to one that said, yeah, saw the Great Pyramid, it was cool, yeah, whatever, it was cool. No, they're all like, yeah, I saw that thing, and I passed out. I was so blown away by the size and the beauty. I never heard someone say, yeah, no big deal. Yeah, whatever. It was, you know, I was more interested in getting to the bar. I needed a drink or whatever. I stood there for a half an hour just going, you know, just, I had no words for this. So, and that's where I come from, I guess, where it's like, they hear someone say, they should just knock those things down. Those are just old.
Yeah. Again, that was an extreme case. And it may have been someone who had grown up in Cairo all his life and was just tired of the whole tourist scene. Who knows? But it's not a totally, it's not a totally isolated opinion. And I mean, take the extreme case, the Taliban in Afghanistan who blew up the huge... people remember that? Mm-hmm. The Buddhist statues?
Yeah.
And whatnot. Now, that was out of religious reasons. I mean, they were making a statement. But you do have that brand of fundamentalism in Egypt also. Some who would. Anything that's pre-Muhammad, pre-Muslim, they would want to destroy.
Such a shame that, obviously, and I go on and on about like a drooling fanboy all the time about how amazing
and it's not just, I just want to be really clear because of the tensions nowadays. I'm not saying anything anti-Arab because look at other countries, China in the Cultural Revolution, they did exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
it happened.
Look at the Soviet Union, they did the same thing. The former Soviet Union.
Look at the United States. Yeah.
It tends to be a cycle sometimes that cultures, for some whatever reason, they go through cycles where they want to destroy not necessarily their heritage, but what they see as the bad old heritage of a previous time.
Maybe I don't want to say embarrassing aspects. I know. I mean, even in Egyptian culture. Ancient Egyptian, Akhenaten. I always mispronounce the name.
Akhenaten.
I do it. Okay, I got it right finally after like 10 years. Akhenaten. I mean, there's obviously there was temples in honor of him that after he did pass on, they were censored.
Absolutely.
They were scratched away. They scrubbed his face.
Yeah, they were demolished completely.
And so it's the same thing. Even within Egyptian culture, it happens all over.
Absolutely.
And that scares me too.
It happens in every society. I mean, they'll tear down gorgeous old buildings that have a history that tell something about the area and the people.
Yeah,
and they'll tear it down and put up, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Chain retailer week. Yeah,
the chain retailer of the week.
It's a scary thing. I know that progress. You know, you have to move on. You can't live in the past completely. And you have to move on with new things. But there are, I mean, something like, obviously, something like the Great Sphinx. I could never see something that, like that go away and us putting like a Pizza Hut up there or something. It would just blow me away. It would just blow me away to see something like that. And I could
right,
not.
I agree.
There was, as far as the Mexican pyramids, in Mexico, there was a big
right.
news report like last year that there was a lot of protesting going on because, and I, you know, I don't like pimping Walmart because I really don't like Walmart. I'll say that publicly. I don't care.
Right.
But there was a big protest going on in Mexico as far as the Aztec pyramids were concerned because Walmart did build one of their stores
yep.
in the shadow of the Aztec pyramids.
Oh, yeah. I yeah. remember hearing about that. Yeah.
And
yeah.
people went, and I don't blame them. Some of these people came out of the woodwork going, no, this is ancient. This is a part of our heritage. How can you bring this
right.
store in here
exactly.
and take away from the beauty of what this is.
And see, there in Mexico, I think you've got an interesting example. In Mexico, where you still have, a very large percentage of the population that really is descendants of
yeah.
the people who were building those structures, which is very different than actually in Egypt or, what little we have in America as far as Indian mounds, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, I've always told people, as far as America's concerned, I'm an American. No, you're not. If you were a true
right.
American, you would be an American Indian.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and your name is like Smith. Okay.
You're not an American.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're an American citizen.
Right.
You're an American exactly. citizen, but you're not, you know, a true American. It does happen all over the world, Dr. Shack. We see these things happening, people tearing down these things. I think it's a shame, personally. I think the beauty and the history, the things you can learn from these things. And if people would look at these things and maybe learn from them a little more, besides going, whoa, it's really cool. Okay, let's move on to the next thing. Maybe think about it a little bit more.
Speaking of the next thing, I want to mention, this is not directly related to...
Doug's dropping the hammer. Look out.
Not directly related to the Sphinx or even ancient anything. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess ancient stuff, but...
Yeah.
I saw this special on PBS one time, and I'm glad we have you on the phone, because you can explain it to me.
Okay.
They showed a timeline of the Earth, because what they did is they took a core sample of the ice
mm-hmm.
from
mm-hmm.
Antarctica,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
They went down so many, you know, hundreds of feet or yards or whatever, I don't know, but they, and then
right.
They showed this wonderful graphic that I've not been able to find again.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed the timeline of the Earth from when the Earth was born, or they think the Earth like started,
mm-hmm.
to mm-hmm. now. And mm-hmm. it was maybe on the screen it was probably inches, but it looked like if it were, for example, 3 feet long, this timeline,
right.
there was it was mostly red, meaning, you know, pre-human or whatever. And then there was this little itty bitty teeny sliver of blue, and that was where mankind was.
Right.
Wow.
Right. Mm. Right. The last couple of million years.
Yeah, this teeny little itty bitty sliver of blue, and I thought, you know, okay, if you look at this timeline, because if it's a linear timeline, I don't know if it was linear, if they, you know, I just remember this graphic. The Earth
right.
was around for like ever, and then there's man showed up. They're at least,
yeah,
you know,
no,
at the time.
Humans are a very, very recent phenomenon.
As far as this planet's concerned.
As far as this
yeah.
planet is concerned, and civilization is an even more recent phenomenon. Depending on what you call humans have been around a couple million years. Not the same species, but at least humanoid-type things.
Right.
And civilization, depending on how you define it, even if you... consider civilization going back, you know, further than traditional point of view. The traditional point of view, civilization is maybe 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The work I'm doing, the work that West is doing, other people are doing, is pushing it back further.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you double it or more, it's still, from a geologic point of view, it's nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing.
It's just, like I said, it's a scum on the surface, literally.
And that's why geologists tend to, they dig way back. Or
yeah. I mean, civilization doesn't, I mean, it's not a, that, there, actually, there's a couple of things I'd like to mention here.
Yeah.
One is what I was talking about before. Most geologists don't worry about ancient civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, Yeah. Ancient civilizations aren't very ancient from a geologic point of view.
Sounds like the word ancient isn't is misapplied when you're talking geologic ages.
Yeah. Technically, among geologists, the term recent can actually be used in a technical meaning. And technically, recent for geologists is approximately the last 10,000 years.
So if you were going to a geological summit of some kind, and someone was giving a speech on anything recent, if that was in the title of their speech.
Exactly. No, seriously. I've been to things like that where someone's talking about recent foraminifera. So they're giving a talk on the evolution and stratigraphy of recent foraminifera, which are little microscopic organisms that are used by geologists to correlate rocks to find oil, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they say recent in the title, I would go to that talk expecting to hear about those foraminifera, these little microscopic organisms, over the last 10,000 years. And that, from a geologist's point of view, would be recent, the last 10,000 years.
And obviously it's a very long time for any of us in our little minor lives.
From a human point of view, but from a geologic point of view, it's very little.
Mm.
So, I mean, a lot of geologists, a lot of times when you're talking rocks and stratigraphy and trying to date rocks, you are lucky if you can date them within a few million years. Much less thousands of years.
And that's your slack time, more or less,
Exactly. Now, another point I wanted to make is that we have the Earth is about 4.6 billion years old, so 4,600 million years old. 4.6 billion.
That's an astronomical figure. That's huge.
Yeah, exactly.
And civilization, you figure, even if you take the most extreme view, civilization's been around for, say, 10,000 years or so.
Yeah.
Form or another.
And
I mean,
that just
drives
it home again.
It's a little teeny percentage. But right now I want to make the other point, that why has civilization been around for such a short period of time? Why don't we have civilization 100 million years ago or 500 million years ago? You see my point?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it's a very, no one has, to my knowledge, has ever quite answered that. Why do we have civilization when we have it? Why hasn't civilization been something that was more dominant during Earth history? All the physical factors were perfectly appropriate hundreds of millions of years ago to have civilization. Am I making sense?
Yes. I mean, and I always thought
it
was like,
I don't want to harp on dinosaurs, but why didn't dinosaurs, some of whom were only about 6 feet tall, some of whom walked on two legs, some of whom walked on two legs and had hands that were manipulative like our hands, and had actually larger brains relative to body size than we have, why didn't they develop culture and civilization?
I'm blank.
If
no one has a good answer to that, to my knowledge.
But if they did, could we detect it? I mean, would we be
able
to tell?
Well, that's another question. Could they have, and could they have developed, I mean, this is getting wild speculation, could they have developed a culture that was non-technological?
Because the culture could be as much as, you know, one person building a fire and everybody huddling around it.
That's technological still. Let me try to explain what I mean. Go to, and I don't mean to pick on them, but Australian Aborigines.
Oh, okay.
Australian Aborigines arguably have a more complex, in some ways, mental culture than many Western civilizations, even though they have almost no technology. Am I making sense?
Yeah,
and there's also...
So they have this incredible, you know, if you want to call it myth, whatever you want to call it, but, you know, a very complex mental world, and that doesn't necessarily express itself in a complex physical technology.
And there are similar tribes, I guess you would call them, in South America.
Yeah, absolutely. South America.
Mountains.
I mean, so you get some of these tribes where you look at them superficially, they're running around naked and, you know, using the most rudimentary little sticks for tools, and, you know, you think they're super primitive, and, well, from a technological point of view, they are. But then if you start really studying their culture, they have this incredibly complex belief system and, you know,
and social
language
structure
and yeah. Yeah, social relations and you know. So, again, you know, I think this is part of my point would be, should we be judging them based on our standards and what's important? If they they could turn around and judge us that, well, we've got this incredibly complex technology, but we've got no mental, I'll call it a mental culture, are very rudimentary compared to what they have, even if we sort of reverse it and say, well, they've got a very rudimentary technological culture, but a more complex mental culture.
And that goes right back to ancient Egypt, too, right there. I mean, it
yeah,
goes
exactly,
right back to this
exactly.
long view. I mean, we're talking about a group of people who assembled. That's the idea right now. And there's all types of different theories. I've read a million of them. Who assembled
right.
just to build, let's just say, the Great Pyramid, for example. It's always the greatest example.
Right.
It was obviously no overnight easy task to do this thing. This thing,
exactly.
It's 2,600 two-ton blocks, basically, with a few exceptions here and there. That's not something you just, like, you know, throw up like you throw up a, you know, one of our fast food chains nowadays. They seem to be popping up like dandelions where we live here.
Right.
That just don't happen overnight. So there had to be, and we mentioned this on Sunday with John, there had to be some very, and this is exactly what we're talking about, there's some complex system involved with this.
Exactly.
Mentally, these people, like, and
exactly.
and basically, it's more or less, hey, look, we're building this for our Pharaoh, who is, we're going to help him go to heaven. Obviously, people refer to the Great Pyramid as the stairway to heaven,
right.
And by helping our Pharaoh, we will go to heaven too. We will have eternal life. I shouldn't use the term heaven so loosely, but we will
right.
have eternal life. We will live forever. I mean, what greater tool do you need to motivate a group of people to take on such a mammoth task as the Great Pyramid right there? That idea alone, in my opinion, if we could harness that, if people would, and I don't want to digress either, but if people had this idea about their work, like the work we do here, I mean, I'm the first one to tell people we do this because we love to do it. We
right.
absolutely love our job we have on here, and sometimes we do get a little annoyed here and there, but we absolutely completely love what we do here, and it's a great time. We learn all kinds of God tonight, especially. Jeez, mm-hmm. Dr. Shock, my head's like, I can actually feel my brain like squeezing on the inside of my skull. I think we learn all these great things, and we do it because we really love to do it. And there may be a goal there somewhere. There may be the Great Pyramid for us that we will build someday. In a manner of speaking, we don't really know what it is, but
right.
we still that's the fun of it, though, is it's the adventure, more or less. And I think that may have been the adventure for these people to do what they did to build the Great Sphinx whenever it was built,
right,
or the Great
exactly.
Pyramid whenever it was built too. This that idea right there can motivate armies of people to do what they did. It's never been done since then either. That's the thing. I no one, and I know for a fact, there's never been built like the Great Pyramid.
No, nothing. Never in terms of the size, never in terms of the massiveness, never in terms of all that. Yeah,
and exactly. the beauty too.
Nothing
and there's,
like it.
There's a lot of really pretty. There's a lot of pretty buildings out there. I've seen buildings where I'm like, yeah, that's a really cool looking building there. I really want to walk in there and look around. But I've never seen anything myself. Such as just such awe-inspiring and just like
oh, no.
so heavy.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, it's hard to get into. You know, I don't want to get into in a discussion like this. But the mathematics of the Great Pyramid, the proportions, that type of thing. I get into it in my book, Pyramid Quest, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But the mathematics that are encoded into the Great Pyramid are just incredible. The alignment of it. It's the most perfectly aligned building. probably to this day on the face of the planet.
Well, Dr. Shock, if you don't mind, we're going to have you back on to talk about that, too.
Eventually.
Sure.
We'd love to.
Because that's one thing wow, I'm going to need to sit down and, like, well, at least get you on the phone again and have you rack my head some more.
Perhaps after after folks have read your book and they have questions for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Run out.
What's the name of the book again?
Pyramid Quest.
And you have a cool website, too. What's that website?
Yeah. www.robertshock, which is all one word, RobertShoch .net.
It's a wonderful website. And on your site, I mean, I spend a great deal of time there. You go to your site, and there's a lot of your works up there as far as your papers you've written.
Yeah, exactly.
Following right along with a lot of the things we talked about tonight, too.
Exactly.
So if there's any more questions people have out there, they're listening and are going to listen to this show, RobertShoch.net. Tons of stuff on there to check out. Check out the book, Pyramid Quest, also.
There's also something else, because this is something that we forgot to mention.
What's
with
that?
John Anthony West.
Yeah.
There's this foundation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because this work that you've done, that you and John Anthony West have done, it's groundbreaking work. I'm glad somebody thought to do it, finally. You know, and it's, like we were mentioning, laughable that it couldn't have been done, you know, decades ago. But I'm glad someone had the idea and took you out to Egypt and said,
look
at this and tell me what you think.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to continue that kind of work, in order to actually, you know, get together folks who don't already have predispositions and who have fields and areas of expertise, they've established a foundation, right? The
exactly.
Ancient Wisdom Foundation?
The Ancient Wisdom Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you go to my website, you'll find a link to it there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ancient Wisdom Foundation, which I forget all the technical legalistic stuff, but basically, you know, non-profit charitable foundation for carrying on this type of work. And John West and I are both, I forget what our titles are, but founding members and, you know, board directors or whatever. But basically, it's a vehicle so that if people would like to donate in a material way, more or less money, or contact us and work out other things, you know, that would like to participate, that type of thing. Because I've been over there more than once, and John has too. Of course, he does his actual tour groups there, but I've been there more than once where I'll be doing my research. But people just to put it crudely, contacted me out of the blue, but were interested, have come with me and contributed.
And that's
so
great.
That's great, too. It's always very inspiring. And, you know, I think that's partly, at least I'll say for myself, what keeps me going, because it is... Not to complain, but it is a service situation over the last, 15 years that I've been heavily involved in this. It can get depressing once in a while when you go to a meeting of Egyptologists and everyone's on your case. I mean, you know they're wrong, you know you're right, but it still gets sort of depressing. So then you have to go to a geological meeting where everyone agrees with me.
Oh, that helps.
Yeah, yeah. It's the proper mix of the sugar and the salt. It's so great. We're gonna definitely push that on our site more, too. We want people to get involved with that if possible, including ourselves,
good.
Too. Because we find this work amazing. We find this work absolutely amazing. These new ideas of this sort are the things that just, it drives this show now. These are the things that just, we love to have people.
New ideas, new things, and this is relatively new.
Well, 15 years, 15 years geologically.
Geologically is nothing.
You might as well write that off. That's absolutely, so this is, it's within 10,000 years.
Within academia, it's that 15 years is new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
15
absolutely.
Years, and I'm sure there's still a lot of work to do on this, so.
Absolutely, absolutely. The research continues.
Dr. Shock, it's been an honor having you on our show. It really
has
been.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.
And if you want to, we'll put the invite, like we do with everybody, we put the invite out, and we'd love to have you back on to talk about Project Quest.
Oh, I'd be happy to. So we'll arrange something.
Or any upcoming projects, anything you've got going on.
Keep us informed.
I will. I'm working on the next trip to Egypt right now.
Oh, bring me. Take me, please. Can we work something out? Like, you know, I only got about $10 on me right now, but, you know.
He'll carry your books.
I will be your caddy. I'm so there.
Although, I have to say, on the last show, and I don't know if Scott will listen to this, because you cut out about half hour before.
Yeah.
I did tell anybody who goes on John Anthony West's because he goes on these tours,
tours.
Yeah, he does tours.
And if any Ghostly Talk listeners go on that tour, I want to have them on the show.
Yeah.
I want to have the person who goes to, just if you go to Egypt on the, West's tour, come on Ghostly Talk and tell us what it was like.
Yeah. We want
how
to talk
he
to you.
Was, tell us the
story. We want to talk.
We want to know
you.
The
story.
Plus, Scott L. will probably grill the person.
Yeah, I'll mercilessly beat them down with a verbal stick for an hour and a half.
Why don't you guys come to Egypt and we could do a show from Egypt?
I'm actually really, really considering trying to get that together. I'm working on that.
Seriously.
Doug, if you do that, dude, I will be like such a little
do it live from Egypt.
We'd love to do that. Are you kidding me, Dr. Shock? Let's work it out.
I'm trying it.
It could be done. I mean, with modern technology.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah! I'm sure they have internet in Egypt.
Well, now my brain went from like overdrive to like hyperdrive. Now I'm not gonna be able to sleep tonight. Thank you, Dr. Shock.
Because as a matter of fact, the fellow who designed the website of Scott L's former band was
one of the websites we have. His name is Hani, and he actually. Sector7.tk. That's the name of the website. He does great graphics work. Okay, he lives right in Cairo, and he actually invited me to come out. He's like, "Yeah, I live. I can look at the pyramids from my house." I'm like, "Oh, dude, come on."
So they obviously have internet in Cairo.
We could
do Ghostly Talk in Cairo.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It'd be
great.
There
you go.
A lot of ideas out here, people. I mean, this is a lot to take in. The last two shows with John Anthony West and Dr. Shock tonight, a lot to take in. I hope that you can handle it. I'm having a hard time handling it, but I'm going to probably have to listen to this one over again just to get all this information in. But like I said, Dr. Shock, it really was great to have you on here.
Thank you. Hope to have you on again.
Guys,
we will.
Yeah, definitely. Dr. Shock, hold on the line for a second, okay?
Okay.
We're going to close the show out. We want to talk to you after we got the air here for a second, though, if you don't mind.
Okay,
great. Guys, thanks. Hey, special show. We got them going on the rest of the month here.
Yeah, the whole month is regular shows and special shows.
Don't we have, what's next week? This coming Sunday we have,
John Zaffis.
John
Zaffis.
And paranormal.
Coming up.
And then next
the
week.
Paranormal Museum.
Oh, the 20th, we have Henry Rollins coming
Henry Rollins. Yes.
And you guys thought we had a pretty intense conversation tonight.
Henry Rollins, commentary, movies. He'll probably if you got a movie you want him to comment on. He does the independent.
Well, he's been all over the planet. I mean, we were talking about a foreign land here tonight, and a lot of ideas about that. And that's what I think we're really going to talk with Henry about is just the places he's been and the things he's seen, the crazy stuff that he's checked out over the years, and him touring with Black Flag and his band, and just amazing.
It'll
stuff.
Be very interesting. Yes.
That's as far as we're going to go right now. All right. What else?
With him, Mick and Sylvie A. Coming on yet this.
Oh, yeah.
This month.
Oh, yeah.
So it's an action pack. Oh, and Preston Dennett.
Preston Dennett, end of the month. Yeah, we're going to be jamming with him.
Yeah.
And Edge. Edge also from Ireland, the Archdruid of the Hiberian Order of Druids. That's like the coolest title I've ever heard.
And we're going to get to speak with Edge. Yeah.
So it's going to be a busy month.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, put on your seatbelts. It's going to be a crazy month. Still.
And go to Robert Schock's website.
RobertShock.net.
Yes.
Check out his new book.
New book? Pyramid Quest.
Pyramid Quest. There's just okay. I'm done.
That's
I'm
it.
Going. I'm done. I'm
we,
finished.
We ought to just close the show.
Will, hit me.
Thank you, everybody. It's been a pleasure to broadcast from the Warren Winery.
The new Warren.
Yeah,
the new Haunted fresh
winery in Warren. The brand new place.
Hey, let us know how it sounds. Let us know how everything sounded here. Seriously,
thank
email
you so
us.
Much.
Let us know if there's anything you want to hear. You let us know.
Good night, and we'll catch you 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday.
Yes.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
The media become the media.